Good morning or afternoon, depending on when this drops, and welcome back to the H2P podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports. I'm your host, Gary Morgan. With me, as always, is the beat writer for Pitt Athletics here at DK Pittsburgh Sports, Corey Crisson. How are you doing today, Corey?
Live from Kalamazoo, Michigan, on this fine Sunday morning after Pitt rolled out QB4 and beat Western Michigan 34-13. And look, it's going to be known as the Nate Yarnell game, and it's going to be known as, you know, the symphonic Beethoven performance. If you saw the video on Twitter after the game, Pat Narduzzi said Nate Yarnell was playing Beethoven, you know, in the hotel. And I didn't think anything of it. I'm like, oh, okay, he's, you know, listening to Beethoven. And then after the game, coach deposits this video on Twitter, and it's Nate Yarnell playing the piano in the hotel lobby. And I'm like, this is some psycho stuff. You know, you're playing classical music in a hotel lobby before your first career start. You're a redshirt freshman. You've never done this before at the college level, and you're playing Beethoven on a grand piano in a random hotel lobby. Unbelievable stuff from Nate Yarnell, and he didn't blow up the stat sheet by any mean, but you know.
No, but let's start at the beginning. You know, yeah. It's 34-13. They beat Western Michigan, and I would say if you watched the game, it was a lot closer than that final score. I mean, it stayed very, very tight until the fourth quarter. So, you know, I think there was probably some sweaty butt cheeks going on in the fan base a little bit. You know, people a little bit concerned, and rightfully so. You don't want to lose to a school like that in a season where you've got a lot of promise. So, you know, I understand. Starting a third string or fourth string quarterback, scary always. Mm-hmm. But I mean, Keaton Slovis was available for the game, right? I mean, that's what it was reported nationally anyway. So can you shed any light on that as to how he could be available to play yet not healthy enough to play?
You know, I always think that's an interesting dynamic because you see it and you hear about it all the time about how so-and-so can play but won't play unless he's absolutely needed. Well, then what do you define as absolutely needed?
For
a quarterback, I think it's more clearly defined, right? Like if Nate Yarnell goes down with, knock on wood, some kind of injury, then Keaton Slovis would have been ready to play. So here's what we know about the situation now, and here's the clarity we received. First of all, I thought I would have sold – you know, I would have put, I put the Who Wants to Be a Millionaire final answer on Keaton Slovis starting. Because I thought he was going through the pregame routine. He was going through it with the backup center, Terrence Moore. Owen Drexel didn't travel. He was looking good and confident and walking around and seemed chipper during warmups. I'm like, he's going to play, isn't he? And Nate Yarnell trots out for the first snap. So, my bad. But, we asked Pat Narduzzi, you know, what's the situation? And, you know, he basically said Keaton was cleared by team doctors, by, you know, medical professionals, whoever it may be. Slovis was cleared to play. He could have played. And Narduzzi said he felt Keaton wasn't quite 100% quite yet. So it ultimately came down to, you know, DNP coach's decision. And this week, Narduzzi prepared Derek Kyler, of course, the Dartmouth transfer, and Nate Yarnell, of course, the former three-star prospect who, by the way, I mentioned this in the story too, and people were freaking out. It's like, why are we starting this kid in his first game on the road, the team that beat us last year? If you look at recruiting rankings and player rankings, Nate Yarnell, with the rating that he got on, I did this with 24/7 Sports. I don't know if you saw me post this, Gary.
He was a 4-star, right?
3-star, according to 24/7.
Well, I thought he was a 4-star.
But here's the thing. Of all of Western Michigan's all-time recruits that they've pulled in, right? Guess where Nate Yarnell would have ranked?
I'm guessing number one.
Number one. He would have been Western Michigan's best ever recruit dating to whenever 24/7 started doing the rankings. So, and I wrote this in my gamer.
And they've put some wide receivers in the NFL, so it's not as though they haven't produced any talent.
Yeah. So regardless, Nate Yarnell was going to be the best player on that field, you know, opposite them, you know, or whatever, however you want to word it, right? He was still going to be better than any other player that Western Michigan was going to put on the field based on that metric. So this wasn't like Pitt was starting some kid that came into the building on Monday. You know, Nate Yarnell's been there. He's been through practices. He's scout team. He's working with first team defenses. He understands it. He knows the playbook. And look, you give Nate Yarnell only 12 passing attempts, and this was a textbook Pat Narduzzi game plan. Like, I said this after the game to Jared Apollo, who covers the team for the Trib. I said, if you could pick one game in Pat Narduzzi's coaching career and say what game defines what Pat Narduzzi was about, this game is a candidate just from the sheer standpoint of game planning. It was run the ball down the throat, wear them down, and then strike when the iron's hot. That's what this game plan was, and it worked flawlessly. Now, it looked ugly in the beginning, which I know we want to talk about a little bit, with some of the play calling, a lot of running. But again, that style worked.
We'll get into that a little bit more. I just want to drill a little bit deeper on the actual quarterback situation before we talk about the game, because I wondered, watching it from the play calling, how much of that was because he didn't know the entire playbook? And you kind of touched on it already, like illustrating that you think he knows most of it. I'm not 100% sure, because how many snaps would he really have been getting in practice during that competition? It looked to me like they had about 10 to 12 different passing sets that he was really accustomed to, and a lot of them seemed to come out of the pistol, which, I don't know, that seems like an odd formation to be where you'd focus a new guy. It makes handoffs a little awkward. It makes even passing a little bit more difficult sometimes.
Maybe that's where his comfort level is. You know, obviously, we've seen Frank Signetti, the offensive coordinator, adjust to his quarterback, right? You put Keaton Slovis in the shotgun against West Virginia a lot, with a lot of 11 personnel and 21 personnel, two running back sets. And then when Nate Patty has to play against Tennessee, he adjusts 12 personnel, one running back, two tight ends, and he puts Patty under center. Here we saw a little bit of both. We saw under center. We saw 12. We saw 21. We saw him in the shotgun, in the pistol, like you mentioned. The touchdown run to Abanacanda was out of the pistol. So,
right.
So this is a product of Frank Signetti making his adjustments. Again, remember we talked about last week against Tennessee where Signetti essentially had to pivot like three times in that game because you start the quarterback, he gets hurt, you adjust. He's healthy, you play with him healthy, he gets hurt, you adjust. You make your halftime adjustments, you make all adjustments everywhere. This was a Frank Signetti, you know, dial it up so Nate Yarnell doesn't, you know, have to do anything too insane, or so he doesn't have to, you know, go out and beat Joe Montana in this game. This was all about, I mean, Izzy carried the ball 31 times. You know, I quipped during the game, you know, he's going to get the workload that Javonte Williams fantasy owners want him to get, the Denver running back, because everybody's clamoring, hey, feed him the ball, feed him the ball, feed him the ball. They fed Izzy the ball. That was the entire plan of yesterday, was to run the ball down the throats. And by the way, Sebo Flemister got in. You got a touchdown run from Daniel Carter. You got a bunch of runs from Vincent Davis. So they used their running backs, which is something we talked about all training camp and all through the first couple of weeks. And they had the same exact play to Gavin Bartholomew down the sideline, too, that you saw against Tennessee. He just didn't make any insane hurdles on anybody.
Well, let's take a quick break here, and I should probably throw out some kudos to you for managing to make it 9 minutes into a podcast without bringing up what your alma mater did there. So yesterday.
We'll get there.
Quick one.
We'll get there.
All right, and we are back to the H2P podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports. Corey and Gary with you, and one more question about the quarterback. I promise I'll stop after that. Somebody proposed on Twitter right after this game, well, we got Rhode Island next week, so let's start Yarnell again and let Slovis sit. Now, I can see the logic in that. You know, let him get a little experience. It looks like Nick Patty might be out for a while. It'd be good to get your backup a little bit more time. But I think we saw from the first couple games that Keaton Slovis kind of needs to work on his timing and working with this offense a little bit too. I'm not sure I'd waste that opportunity if he's healthy. Where are you at on that?
This is a great topic. This is a really good topic. By the way, if you heard me chewing in the end of the first segment, that was me having my hotel bagel. As you know, I woke up probably 45 minutes before this. So if you heard chewing noises, that's me being a professional.
Yeah, this is the glamour of covering teams that nobody gets to see is these poor sons of bitches got to wake up at like 8 a.m. after like not leaving the stadium till like 2.
Oh man, I love it though.
Have no idea the bleakness of it. I feel so.
I love
everybody
it.
Everybody thinks it's such a glamorous job, but it's tough, man.
No, I love it. This is the fun stuff. But you have to kind of make do with what you can. The coffee's great, by the way, at this place I'm staying. But anyway, the quarterback question. I love this topic because I did see this as well last night, and you have two sides of it again. Nate Yarnell, he played well enough against Western. He kind of earned the right to at least have that consideration, especially Pat Narduzzi said yesterday he didn't feel Keaton was 100% healthy. And I want to make a point to, you know, highlight that, because if Narduzzi felt Slovis was 100% yesterday, I wouldn't put it past him to play him. So is this going to be Keaton is 100%, we are playing him, period, end of story? Or is this going to be a Keaton is still not 100%, let's still not play him, Nate Yarnell's QB1 again? I think that as long as Slovis' health checks out, I feel like they are going to play him. And here's why. Along the lines of what you said to start, Gary, where we saw it in the West Virginia and Tennessee games, there were moments where the receiver timing wasn't 100% clean. There were good plays, don't get me wrong. He made good throws. Receivers made good catches. There were good plays. There were touchdown passes, obviously. It's not like – but it's also not like they have the most fluid timing in the world. And they're not 100% in sync. That still needs to develop a little bit. And this is always
important,
the case.
Important designation, too. The reason that I think I'm personally worried about it, we've got one more game before ACC play starts. And that's where you really want everything to be firing on all cylinders.
Of course. That
Rhode Island is the last tune-up.
Of course. And another topic we could get into is how many injuries Pitt has right now. The gravity of the players that are injured, but regardless with the quarterbacks, I see both sides of it, and I see how both sides of it could be beneficial. On one hand, you play Nate Yarnell against Rhode Island, and you're guaranteeing that Keaton Slovis is going to be 100% into ACC play. Like, that will be the, like, set it in stone, lock it in guarantee if you play Nate Yarnell against Rhode Island, is that Keaton Slovis will be 100% healthy. No questions asked going into ACC play. You're not risking another injury by putting him out there against Rhode Island. You're not risking a, you know, concussion, we were told it was. You're not risking another concussion. You're not risking an ankle or anything crazy. You're keeping him in the bubble, right? That's the positive with playing Nate Yarnell. The positive to playing Keaton is exactly what you're saying, with developing chemistry with the receivers and ironing out some of the kinks. I think that what they are going to do is as long as Keaton is 100% healthy, he's going to play. Now, whether you agree with that or not, that's up for debate. But I don't think it's a bad strategy from the standpoint of what you're talking about with developing that timing. And by the way, I think just from getting Keaton more comfortable with Frank Cignetti's play calling, more comfortable with the offense. I mean, think about it. We played 3 games and Keaton Slovis has had, what, 6 quarters? Live, run the offense, get the playbook going. I mean, 6 quarters out of 3 games, by my math, and that's
two
half.
Quarters of that against, 2 quarters of that against West Virginia was very much so feeling them out. And
right.
Not, you know.
So by my my metric, that's half of the season he hasn't played.
You wonder if Pat Narduzzi would be open to almost treating it like an NFL preseason game, starting Slovis, get a decent lead, and then go with Yarnell to finish it off.
I'd like to know if he's thinking that. That's something maybe I'll ask him on Monday.
Yeah, we'll see. I've never seen him do it. I've never seen him like make a decision like that with QB.
Be cool if a reporter was in the room Monday to ask him that. Along with him.
Well, you know, I don't have to say hint for you to get the hint.
Oh, I know.
So let's talk about the actual game a little bit, because Izzy Abanikanda, obviously the star of the offense. I guess Jared Wayne, too, before his injury. But 31 carries, as you already said, 133 yards and a touchdown. It took him a long time to really break through. You know, he was getting stopped at the line or near on a whole lot of those carries, and it's not as though Western Michigan didn't know that the runs were coming. You know, Vincent Davis almost cracked 100. You know, 11 carries for 83 yards. So we definitely got to see a little bit of that running back by committee that was advertised at the beginning.
I'm glad I got to see Sebo Flemister get his a little bit too. Andre Powell, running backs coach, told us this week he's been trying to get Sebo involved. He wants Sebo to have some plays, but product of the West Virginia game, Rodney Hammond, product of the Tennessee game, Izzy Abanikanda. Both those guys get hot, you don't take them out, right?
Right.
And also Flemister fumbled his first carry against West Virginia. Doghouse question mark. Was he in it? I don't know. Anyway, but Flemister too, 4 carries, 29 yards. You know, he had a pretty nice run there. He had a longest 17. He looked okay. And look, this was exactly like you said, what was advertised. Even by the way, without Gabe Hoyt, right tackle, he didn't play. Without Owen Drexel at center, he didn't play. Jake Cradle moved from right guard over to center. And Blake Zumovic started right guard, which caught me off guard. Because in warmups, I saw Slovis warming up with Terrence Moore, the backup center who came in last week for Owen Drexel when he got hurt. And I'm like, that's a indicator a little bit. And then, of course, Nate Yarnell starts. So good job, Corey. But again, the running game. Let me ask you this, by the way, because I didn't really see it live. I just, you know, remember the play a little bit. Did they show Jared Wayne like getting taken off the field or like going to the tent or anything on TV?
They showed he and Marquez Williams coming back out after the half. They walked out under their own power, didn't have crutches or boots or anything. Okay. No idea what those injuries were. You have to assume with Jared Wayne, it's probably concussion protocol.
Yeah, could be.
He did take the head shot there with that big catch down the sideline, which was a heck of a catch and throw. So really nice.
One of our readers pointed this out to me, and I want to bring it up really quick about Nate Yarnell. One last thing. I don't think he made a bad throw. Like, nothing into quad coverage, nothing into triple coverage, nothing that was, like, hanging and could get intercepted. I mean, those two rainbows that he threw to Jared Wayne, the 30-yard bombs, those were good footballs. They were placed perfectly. They were right on the sideline, only where he could get them. So I wanted to point that out real quick about
His worst pass was still a completion. The 18-yarder to Bub Means, it was a low throw. You know, he almost skipped it in there. It was a good reception by Means, and he's had some drops, so that was good to see.
Yeah.
But yeah, that everything else was good. And if I'm just gonna put my fan hat on, he threw the ball better and cleaner than I've ever seen Nick Patty throw the ball.
Okay, that's your assessment. I don't disagree with it. Because I haven't seen Nick Patty throw a lot, quite frankly. You know what I've seen from Nick Patty is Peach Bowl, and you know, just like you guys, Peach Bowl, and then second half of Tennessee. So
yeah, keep in mind the distinction there. I'm not telling you that I think Nick Patty can't throw a ball that well. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it's better than I've ever seen him throw the ball, because I've never seen him on the field healthy long enough to throw a lot of balls. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, that's the only judgment I can give it is what I've seen. I don't get to watch them practice. So
can I take a moment to rehash the injury situation? Because I think this is an important topic as we go into Rhode Island. So did not travel, not on the travel roster. Nick Patty, Roddy Hammond, Owen Drexel, defensive end Deion Hayes, and D tackle Devin Danielson. So five starters, if you really count Patty as the backup. Dressed but did not play. So they traveled, but they didn't play. Keaton Slovis, Gabe Hoyt, Deslin Alexander. So team captains, two captains right there, and then Gabe Hoyt, your starting right tackle, did not play. And then obviously hurt during the game. We saw Jared Wayne go down. We saw Marquez Williams go down. Nate Temple got hurt, and then Hoppe Baldonado got hurt. So I'm counting, what, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 names on the injury report right now. And 10 of those are starters. So I think, and this might segue us a little bit into Rhode Island, number one thing is get healthy. I mean, you have to at this stage. Yeah. Find a way to get healthy. Maybe this is why we haven't seen Gabe Hoyt yet. Maybe this is why Deslin missed the second game in a row. Maybe this is why, Deion was held out and didn't travel. Maybe this is why Rodney didn't travel. Like, you got to kind of get the health going before ACC play starts because, again, like you said, it's go time. You know, you can't really slip up against these ACC teams. And Pitt has definitely caught an injury bug right now, and it's a little concerning to me.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you see two thin positions in particular get affected, like wide receiver and defensive back. With Marquez Williams, he's probably their best at most seasoned back there, I would say. And Jared Wayne is very much so the leader of the wide receivers. So those two in particular, man, you really want to get them healthy before ACC play.
Well, Baldonado, too. I think Baldonado, you know, some preseason mock drafts had him going in the first round of the NFL draft. That's what I saw. And obviously your quarterback and your right tackle and your two-time team captain, Deslin Alexander, and you know, your running back, Rodney Hammond, who made West Virginia look like powder puff football. I mean, these are significant injuries, I think. Your starting center. The names and the positions attached to these guys that are on the injury report, they're significant names. You know, again, 10 out of 12 of these guys are starting players. So, you know, you got to kind of get right on that. I hope that the injuries to Wayne and Williams aren't too serious. And obviously with Baldonado, too. I think I saw Baldonado still in uniform. I don't remember if he came back into the game.
He just took his helmet off and was standing there. So it didn't look like whatever his was. It's one of those ones where if you're watching from home, you're kind of going like, oh, he's probably all right.
Okay.
You know, good. He's standing there like, I could go back in maybe if I wanted to. He was actually standing next to Narduzzi, like tapping him on the shoulder every once in a while. Like, come on, let me, you know.
Like, right. Well, I saw him in the injury tent and I was like, here we go again, you know, but that's good to hear. I can't really watch much of the broadcast when I'm in the box and I have 1,000 things flying around and Pat Narduzzi's talking about playing Beethoven in a hotel lobby. So hard to watch a game when you have all that going on.
Let's take another quick break, come back, finish up, talk about Rhode Island a little bit. All right, and welcome back to the H2P podcast here on DK Pittsburgh Sports. Gary and Corey with you, and we're going to try as best as we can to talk a little bit about Rhode Island, FCS school, Corey. We don't know a whole lot about them, really, besides who they've played and what their record is, and I'm going to let you fill in as many blanks as you can, and we'll talk about where we think Pitt can take most advantage.
Well, thankfully, I covered the FCS once upon a time and my time in Youngstown State. But this game, the big storyline is that it's the Pat Narduzzi Alumni Bowl, however you want to call it. But it's his alma mater. You know, Pat Narduzzi, a linebacker at Rhode Island from 1987 to 1989. He goes back to coach there from 93 to 97 as a linebacker coach. He's their D coordinator in 98 and 99. Yeah, this is a special thing for him. And I mean, you don't want to make the coach the story. You really don't want to do that. But I think it's neat when this kind of thing happens. And obviously, this is a bye game, and Rhode Island's an FCS team. They have to make their money in some way. And here's the thing about Rhode Island, okay? Let me try to paint this as best as I can. Rhode Island's ranked 14th in the FCS. They just lost to number 10 Delaware in a pretty bad way, by the way. But regardless, they lose to a top 10 FCS team. Their scoring offense is tied for 22nd in the league. Their scoring defense is tied for 23rd in the FCS. So this isn't a massive cupcake game either, right? This is a good Division I AA FCS program. This is a good program. They play in the Colonial Athletic Association, the CAA. So it's a pretty good FCS league. You know, I admittedly am not a savant on Rhode Island football either, but here's what I can say about what needs to happen on Pitt's side. First off, like we talked about in segment two about injuries, get healthy, you know, find some way to play the game and win the game despite having as many players on the injury table as you do. I think the key thing against Rhode Island, and maybe we'll see it again next week in a similar manner we just saw against Western Michigan, is it's going to be another classic Narduzzi game plan where he jams the football down their throat with Izzy and Rodney and Sebo and Vincent Davis and Daniel Carter and lets whoever's a quarterback, whether it's – if it is Keaton Slovis, like we talked about it could be if he truly is going to be 100% next week, then maybe he attempts, what, 20 passes? What yeah. If Nate Yarnell attempts 12 against Western Michigan, what's a comfortable number you'd – I'm asking you. What's a comfortable number – you'd be willing to see Keaton Slovis throw against Rhode Island? Is it 20? Is it 25? What's it at for you?
I think if they threw it 20 to 25 times, I'd be shocked with any quarterback against Rhode Island. I don't think they're going to need to throw the ball that much, to be honest with you.
Well, no, I want to make that clear. I don't think so either. But for the sake of getting out some of those some of those wrinkles in the game, I'd in say the execution.
10 to 15 good passing route plays. You know, I'd like to see a little bit of run pass option, run some play action, you know, just some different sets. Make sure that you got a good handle on all that stuff. Yeah. I don't even care about the completion percentage all that much because, let's be honest, it just doesn't matter as much against this opponent.
It would not surprise me if the game script from this week against Western was a carbon copy against Rhode Island, if Narduzzi ran a similar philosophy. Now, is that a good thing? Do we want to do that? Because in ACC play, you're not going to have this luxury anymore, right, of just being a better and more talented football team. You're just not going to have that. So do you start to put in some of that chocolate drizzle, if you will, on the vanilla? Do you start to let Keaton or Nate air it out downfield a little more? Does, if Nate plays against Rhode Island, does he attempt more than 12 passes? Does he get closer to that 20 mark? It depends on the health of the receivers too. With Jared Wayne in particular, it depends on health there. So I'm curious because I think you're going to see another, and you might at home be watching the game like, why is this even close? Like, it's the first quarter. We're not blowing them out by 21. Like, I think next week is going to be, and Pitt's not going to disrespect Rhode Island and, you know, say, oh, it's a scrimmage for us and this and that. They're not going to do that. But I think what Pitt is going to do against Rhode Island is try a little bit more than what we've seen at least early on in these games, in these first few games. Early on, it was kind of slow process. Started up slow, vanilla at first, run the ball, a little conservative. Now, that might happen at first again against Rhode Island, but I'd expect them to open up a few more plays. They're not going to put anything like their A plays on tape for Georgia Tech to see.
Absolutely.
So I'm not expecting a masterpiece, a symphonic masterpiece from Frank Cignetti in a play calling sense and a masterpiece of a game from the quarterback. But I want a clean game. I want Pitt to play a clean game. These three games haven't been the cleanest brand of football that Pitt could play.
On the defensive side of the ball, the Panthers, they may dumb down their playbook on offense, and they have always done that against inferior competition. They never change their defense, though. They're still going to leave those corners on an island. They're still going to send pressure. They're still going to do everything they do against everybody. So when you're facing a team like this, your only real way of getting burned is if the quarterback is good and they have at least one really good receiver that has a good day. Well, you know, Rhode Island does have Kasim Hill. He's not bad. I mean, he's averaging about 235 yards a game, and he's got some talented receivers out there that can get the ball, and especially if Marquez Williams is hurt. You know, you wonder if Pitt maybe should adjust that game plan a little bit and give some help to the backside out there.
Well, Rhode Island's two leading receivers, Katero Summers and Ed Lee, they're both averaging over 17 yards a catch. Summers has three touchdowns. Lee has two. But Lee has more receptions. He has 15 receptions to Summers' 11. He has 88 yards a game to Summers' 63. So those are going to be the two guys that Rhode Island leans on. Rhode Island's running back, Jalen Smith, 29 carries for a net 195 yards and two touchdowns. He's averaging 6.7 yards a carry. Their backup running back, Marquez the Shields, 32 carries, two touchdowns. He's averaging 5.8 per carry. So this isn't a slouch offense. You know, they have a few weapons. And again, the FCS level, here's what I'll say about that. And you can look at a player like a Tyler Wiltz as an example, who came over from Missouri State, albeit that's one of the top programs in that. They almost beat, who was it, Arkansas yesterday?
Right.
Was it Arkansas? Right. Yeah. So, I mean, these FCS teams have done it before, where they've marched into a top 25 team and they've won, right, Michigan?
Sure.
So
Pitt struggled with Delaware a couple of years ago.
He struggled with Youngstown State, however many, you know, about.
That's because the Penguins are awesome.
I mean, yeah.
But
yeah. Listen, I know we are. You know, we're always proud Penguins. My alma mater's in football. They go together like coffee and cream. It's amazing. Syracuse is football school.
it's important to note. It's important to note all the stats we bring up from Rhode Island. They're from facing Stony Brook, Bryant, and Delaware.
Sure. No, but that's not to discredit them either. I mean,
it's not. It's just to say that there's a reason that Western Michigan was running the ball really well until they ran into Pitt this week, right? Sure. I mean, like, there's a reason for the different leagues, and and I think they make themselves apparent as the game goes on. You know, Pitt's offensive line, for instance, in the Western Michigan game, took over in the fourth quarter. Just absolutely took over.
Defensive line was everywhere too. Defensive line was everywhere too. You got to give them credit too. They were everywhere. You know, again, they didn't flood the stat sheet with sacks, but they were putting pressure on Salopek, the Norwin kid. So, you know, they did it right. I think the gameplay was solid, and people at home were probably, you know, throwing the lunatic bricks at the TV. But I thought it was fine. You know, I didn't think this was going to be the sexiest football game I ever saw. I thought it was going to be a rock fight in some ways, and it was up until a certain point.
Yeah. All in all, though, I think Rhode Island is a good tune-up matchup for them. I do think in the secondary – they will face a few challenges because they do like to throw deep, and all it takes really is some bad penalties and, you know, a couple good plays and, you know, a team like that can march right down the field on you. So, interesting to say the least. I think that they'll probably come out of this, with a 3-1 record, but you know, it's good to, hopefully come out of it feeling a lot more polished, like we were talking about, heading into Georgia Tech. So
it's time to wipe the cobwebs, right? You got to wipe the cobwebs off of the machine and get it spinning. So let's get that out of Pitt this week. That would be my expectation going into this Rhode Island game, is to just play a sound football game and clean up some of the stuff. And number one of all things is to get healthy.
Yep. And I think you said the key word, clean. That's what it should be. And speaking of clean, we should end this show on a tidy note here with we're only 5 minutes over our projection. So we'll keep it clean and say, hail to Pitt.